Today's segment of Sound Balming is brought to you by Jimmy and Mary's Authentic Body Care. I cannot express to you how much we love, love, love their products. Although we use them all year, as the weather gets colder, we need these products even more. The dreaded drop in temperature, the dryness, the itchiness, and the unnecessary flakiness is inevitable. Shea Butter from Jimmy and Mary's Authentic Body Care is the only thing that works for my skin and hair needs. Not only do these products cure my dry skin, the whipped butter goes on smoothly and doesn't leave that uncomfortably thick, sticky residue. Bonus? It smells absolutely amazing. There are so many different scents to choose from too. Not only do they carry skincare products, there are products for authentic living, face, shower, hair and beard, spritzers and perfumes, and bath products. Let me tell you, we cannot even keep the stuff in the studio. The entire production team, as well as all our children, use Jimmy and Mary's product. Jimmy and Mary's take pride in creating quality, handcrafted products from simple ingredients for the entire family. Their products are made for all skin types and are 100% handmade, 100% vegan, and 100% cruelty-free. Skincare is important. Moisture is key, and keeping our skin and hair hydrated is essential. I cannot emphasize how much we trust Jimmy and Mary's for all of our skincare needs. Hurry on up to jimmyandmarys.com and check out their products. Did I mention service is fast and efficient too? Don't forget to mention that you heard about Jimmy and Mary's authentic skincare on Sound Balming. Use the discount code SOUNDBALM20 to get 15% off. That's SOUNDBALM20 for 15% off at Jimmy and Mary's authentic skincare.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Balming. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the time of the day it is. Welcome to my show. I know I sound a little nasal today, but I'm okay. I'm COVID-free, all right? But I'm just a little nasal because the weather on the East Coast is changing. I'm Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, the creator of Sound Balming. And my goal with the show is to introduce you to people with ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. Well, you know this, words are a powerful thing. Let me say it again. Let me back up. Let me say it again. In Spanish, we say, más despacio, por favor. Slow it down. Words are a powerful thing. Words can build and lift, comfort and calm, teach and inspire. But to the opposite, words can destroy, demolish, incite, and engage, berate, and criticize, embarrass, and demean. I know it sounds like I'm talking about my mother when I was a kid. I'm not talking about my mom or my teachers at the Catholic school I attended, but I'm talking about words in general. It has been said that in an average day, a person will speak somewhere between 10 and 20,000 words, which means we have tons of chances every day to say something positive or to say something negative. The choice is totally up to us. There's an old saying that says this: sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Let me tell you this. Whoever came up with that saying had it completely wrong. What they needed to say is sticks and stones may break my bones, but unkind words will always hurt me. And a broken bone can heal with time. but the damage done by unkind words might never heal. So they may not say that because it doesn't go like a nursery rhyme, but hopefully you get it. Well, anyone who has ever been on the receiving end of verbal abuse or verbal assault all too well know how this is. Very true. Well, my next guest understands the power of words and is passionate about helping people to unlearn the negative things they've said to themselves or were said about them. Through his work for over 40 years, he has taught countless thousands of people how to improve various aspects of their lives. Besides working in the corporate world, he's facilitated personal growth programs at one of Australia's best known health resorts on the Gold Coast, Queensland, which I'm sure he's going to invite me to soon. He has worked with many elite sports people, including Australian national skydiving team and individuals from the world-class cyclists. He's written several books, been on several TV programs. But listen, his latest book is How to Be Bulletproof from Criticism, has attracted rave reviews from health professionals, business owners, and world-class entrepreneurs. This book contains a unique collection of practical ideas to become more resilient and courageous. And don't we all need that right now? So I want you to put your hands together and give my man a warm, sound-bombing round of applause. I'd like to welcome to the show Bill Lee Emery. Bill, welcome to the Sound Bombing community, brother. Let our listeners know where you're calling in from, and let's just do a mental health check-in. And how are you doing?
Okay, so I'm from the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australia. So that's in the east coast of Australia. I live in a beautiful eco-village. So we have no dogs or cats here. We have our own cafe. We have a community centre. One of the things I do when I wake up in the morning is I go for a walk around my hamlet. We have kangaroos in our garden.
Man, you just making me feel so bad because, first of all, it's cold in America. I'm sounding nasal, which, you know, I'm a health nut. I'm taking every health precaution that I have. But the reality is still things sort of sneak up on you. But it sounds like you in a paradise. Australia is one of the places that I want to visit. I love the topography of Australia. One of my favorite movies, it's called Rabbit Proof Fence. Great story about the personal challenges that people in Australia and the Aborigine people are dealing with, because a lot of my work is around race, culture, class, and things like that. And so, but I've traveled all over the country, but have not gotten to New Zealand, have not gotten to Australia. But after this interview, man, I'm hoping that I'll get an invitation, brother. Well, how are you doing? I mean, you got to be doing great with kangaroos, animals all over, cafe.
We do.
Beautiful sunlight. How are you, brother?
Well, it's 25 degrees centigrade here, so it's sunny. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, just past 7 o'clock in the morning. We're going to have a bit of rain today. We live in paradise. We have one of the things I love about physicality, but it's also the community. We know all our neighbours. We have a deep connection with people. When COVID first hit, it was almost like to us, we're living in this bubble. We still had people in the same kind of pain that many, many millions of people around the world were. You know, things have changed and stuff. But as far as I'm concerned, I've gone to heaven and I'm still alive and breathing.
Well, you've gone to heaven twice because you are joining me in heaven, which is we call the sound bombing community, because the bomb that we're talking about is not ones that are destroying places, but a bomb is a healing. So I'm excited that you decided to join me today, man. Didn't get a copy of your book just yet, but I did go through what my producer shared with me. Excited to talk about the book. But you heard my opening, man. Let's go ahead and unpack this. The power of words. When did you discover the power of words, man?
Well, when I first started doing this work years ago, one of my mentors, from whom a lot of conversations the book is based on, and I remember him saying things like, you know, a lot of people demotivate themselves by the word that they use. For example, if I say I could do this, the chances are I won't. Or I must, I have to. And those kind of words are very much dictatorial. This is what you're going to do. And free choice and free will is taken out of the package.
So, Bill, when did you discover the power of words? And then how have words affected you throughout your life?
So 40 years ago when I started doing this work, one of my mentors helped me to understand that the words I use on the with myself can either create or destroy who I am. And a very simple example, when someone is like, you should do this, you must do that, you have to do that, that's very dictatorial. And there's a rebellious part in me, and there is in most people. So if someone tells me you should be doing this, I'm going to do the opposite, even if I want to do what they say. And it's very different from someone saying, I want to do this, which is choice. So I became very aware of the words that we use and the effect of that. Another very simple example. You're in a park with your child, and the sign says on the grass, don't walk on the grass. What does the child want to do? The child wants to walk on the grass. If I say to you, Lamar, don't think of tomato, what do you think of? You have no choice but to neurologically follow that pathway because the brain doesn't recognize the word not. So especially as a parent, you know, when my daughter was growing up, I was very careful with the words that I was using. And that was part because of the training that I had. But just as I'm careful with the words I would use with her, I'm very careful with the words I use with myself.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I appreciate that. I had a young lady on who wrote a book about finances, and she wrote this book basically for her children. And she said that when she was young, she grew up in Jamaica, and her grandmother was very savvy when it comes to finances. No college degrees or anything like that, but knew how to handle finances. And then she said when she moved to this country, she found herself telling her son when they would go to the store and he would ask for stuff. And she said, well, mommy can't afford that. Dad can't afford that. Then she said that she switched the language. She says, it's just not in our budget. Not that we can't afford it. It's not in our budget. How do words then generate, how do words generate power? And then what have you been doing to help people sort of change the way that they use words when it comes to their own life?
Well, let's take the inner critic that I work with have, like this inner critic that's always telling me you can't do this, you can't do that, you're not good enough, the imposter syndrome, all these kind of things. So the first thing really is being aware of our internal dialogue. If we're not aware, it's just trundling along doing what it's doing, the default program. So the first thing is to really listen to our conversation. And most people that I talk to, if I ask them how do you talk to other people, it'll be a certain structure, it'll be a certain way. The other day is a very compassionate human being, but I was challenging him. So, you know, I get that you're very compassionate about other people. How compassionate are you towards yourself? And he just was. So it's like this. It's okay to be like this for other people, but not for yourself, as if we are not worthy. And I was listening to your previous podcast with Adam, and he was talking about being selfish and how the word are. But if we are not selfish, in terms of not in the bad sense of the word, but if we don't think about what we need for ourselves, how can we give with a full heart? You know, I'm very, very clear on my boundaries, and good boundaries allow life to thrive. If people have got loose boundaries and the structure of their language is part of that, then they cannot really thrive. So it's really interesting to hear interview with Adam, and also about compassion. Compassion is a big part of how I like to live my life for myself and with other people. So part of it is first waking up. You know, waking up is actually fairly easy, you know, being awake.
Yeah.
Staying awake. That's the thing.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it when you said that. I mean, definitely thank you for listening to the show, and Adam's show was real powerful. It just really taught me a lot about being a compassionate leader. I don't know if you are, Bill, are you familiar with the Japanese scientist Masaru Emoto?
Yes, the water man.
The water man. It's funny. You're very familiar with his experiment to prove that words have power when he took pure water in a frozen state, formed beautiful crystals like snow under a microscope, and then he named these two experiments positive and negative, for those who aren't familiar with this, he said the positive ones create fascinating crystals, while the negative ones form no crystals. And positive words are I love you or sweet. Negative words are hate or bad. And these experiments prove that words have power. So why can we look at an experiment like that, like Masaru Emoto? And he did another experiment with the rice and said thank you to one jar and UFO to the other. Why can we look at these experiments? Why can we give these other these affirmations to other people that are in our circles, but then we don't take our own advice? Explain that to me.
Oh man, that's a heavy, long to see if I can adjust it. So actually, let me tell you about an exercise I do with people. This is called the Circle of Roses, and I've done this in the corporate world. I've done this with my daughter's preschool teachers and all the people that are looking after her. So imagine a circle of people and everyone's sitting in a chair, and there's one chair in the middle. And this is a circle of appreciation. So everyone on the outside, is going to give a gift of sincere acknowledgement to the person on the inside. Normally, when someone gives us a compliment, like, hey, nice shirt, you know, we say thank you. And so that's a two-way deal. Circumstance, the person in the center of the circle, their only job is to receive. So when someone gives them a compliment, they're not allowed to say thank you. The only thing, if they do want to speak, they do want to say something, the only thing that they can say is the words of course. And I have lots of boxes of tissues around the place, because when someone is giving someone, you know, really heartfelt
sorry for the technical difficulties, but, you know, Bill is in Australia and we're working this thing out, but he's still impactful, insightful, and giving us a lot of information.
So many years ago, I used to run an exercise in the corporate world. It's called a circle of roses. So imagine a circle of 20 people sitting in chairs, and in the middle, something that they acknowledge and appreciate about the person in the middle. And the way I've set it up, the structure is, well, normally if someone says, gives you a compliment, hey, that's a nice shirt you've got on, then someone will say thank you. So it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. But in this circle street, where the appreciation is going to the person in the middle, because everyone will get a chance of being in the middle. So when someone gives a compliment to the person sitting in the center of the circle, the person is going to want to say thank you, because this is just naturally what we do. But I don't let them do that. The only words they're allowed to say, if they do want to say something, is of course. So someone gives them a heartfelt compliment and those words into their heart, where it can do such an enormous amount of good for that human being. And I've had people, you know, in pinstripe, very serious corporate suits, in genuine and honest, and then they've got no choice but to take that into their heart. And that I have seen to be life-changing. I did this once with all the teachers and carers of my daughter when she was in preschool. And it was such a beautiful thing for me to give that gift to the people who were taking care of my daughter during the day. And so it's a structure, you know, and I'm really good at doing that. But at least in Australia, I think in America, you're kind of different. You know, you're much better at doing that. You know, in Australia, we're very self-depreciating. We, you know, we have the tall poppy syndrome. We're very modest. But the problem is, we hold back on expressing our greatness, the things that are good about us. And that's the structure of how society is. But regardless of that, you know, we can change this. We inside of us, because whatever we give attention to, whatever we focus on, that's what we're going to get more of. So if you want to get more goodness out of your life, then focus on the good things that you can do and bring into the world.
Mm. So let's jump into your book. Talk to me about your book, How to Be Bulletproof from Criticism and Do Whatever the Heck You Want. It is your life. Now, what's interesting, before preparing for this show, I was talking to my cousin And she was sharing with me, she's an amazing mom, amazing partner to her husband, just an all around great person. But she struggles with some self-esteem challenges like most of us do because of the history, because of the stories that she has told herself and the stories that we all have told ourselves. So then I come and sit down, I look at my schedule for the day, and I see the title of your book, and I screenshot and I sent it to her, and I said, this is serendipity. We just had this conversation. So I showed her a copy of your book, and she says, I cannot wait to hear this interview. So let's talk about this book. Tell me why you chose the title, and then what was the inspiration for writing this book?
So for the last 8 or 9 years, I've been involved in men's gatherings here in Australia, and I've been facilitating programs and being a participant at the same time. And one day I was sitting in the canteen just listening to conversations around the table, and I just noticed that there seemed to be a theme of men having difficulty in dealing with criticism, whether it's from their partner, whether it's a professional, whatever it might be, or their own internal critic. And I started thinking, wow, that'd be a great topic for a workshop. So I created a workshop. I ran that the next year. That was very successful. I put it on Udemy as a program. And then I was sitting meditating one day thinking, okay, so what's next? And the idea of a book came up. And so I took all that those ideas and concepts and put it into the book. And one of my early experiences with this that really shaped this was I've been doing corp training and for nearly 40 years. Early in my career, I was teaching to a group of special education teachers. And most of these people had PhDs or master's degrees in education. And I don't have a degree in education. I was teaching about Excel, teaching them stuff that they didn't know that I'd come across. And the program went for 8 weeks. And the first week was great, you know, built rapport with them, we're going fine. And the second week had a bit of a made statement that I didn't think that guilt was a good way of getting kids to do things, and I still don't. And I've been talking about a model of human behavior called transactional analysis, which came from Dr. Eric Byrne, late 60s, early 70s. And it talks about the critical parent, the nurturing parent, the adult, and the child part of us. And she just blew a stack. She just launched the most vitriolic personal attack. No one has come anywhere near close to her. And I've been training for about 5 years, but I've learned a couple of things. So the first thing I did was to breathe into my belly and calm my nervous system. I was really aware of I got into the nurturing part of myself, and I was nurturing myself. So I was doing a lot of useful internal talk. I was rapidly thinking, why is this person attacking me? Now, people only attack if they've got something to defend. So, you know, my brain was running riot, trying to work out what the heck she was doing. And then I had it. And so I just let her talk and talk and talk. I knew eventually she'd have to stop. And when she did, if it was a game of chess, I had her in checkmate with 2 questions. But on the inside, I'm like having a party, my little free charters to go, ooh, we got it. You know, we didn't have to do any violence or anything, but it was just staying calm and staying true to what I know. And so there's a whole bunch of different stories that are in the book from my primary school. And I've taken out the bits that are superfluous, and I've just put the things that are relevant to this topic, how to be bulletproof from criticism. And a lot of it comes to our awareness, which we've spoken about.
So I heard you say that you noticed that when you were in the canteen, and I'm assuming that the canteen is like a bar, like we would say in the United States.
Okay. Oh, no. It's more like
or a restaurant. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's more of a, so when you were in the canteen, you said you were listening, you were overhearing men talk about criticism. Are you, in your work, are you discovering that more men are more critical of themselves than women are?
Oh, I'd say both sexes can do it really well.
they both are professional critics of themselves, right? And they criticize each one another as well.
Indeed. So it seems to be ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So and even little kids, you'll see little kids and they're just, you know, rousing on their younger child, younger siblings or whatever. And it's the same tone of voice. It's the same words that their parents use, that their grandparents use. So this can go from generation to generation until someone wakes up and says, what the heck are we doing? We've got to change this.
So talk to me about waking up. What are some strategies that my listeners can use to sort of wake up, to kill this inner critic, to do what they want to do? Because my show is about helping people live, as they say, live their best life. My show is about really helping people unlock their full potential. We know that many of us have self-doubts. We look at social media and we know that social media plays a role, but we also know that our family members, mama, grandmama, auntie, uncle, the neighbor down the street, we know that many of those stories play a role. So now let's talk about some strategies that come from the book, but then also some strategy that you've been using to help us sort of kill that inner critic that keeps popping up. Because as I said, talking to my cousin today, she says she goes into these places and she feels really good. She's taking these tests, but then all of a sudden as she sits down, that critic, that name, that person, it shows up and it manifests in her real work. And I'm just using her as an example because this is real time. We just talked about this. The same thing with me. You know, I feel that I have that inner critic that pops up and I have all the things that this country says that I need to be successful. But deep down inside, I'm still that little brown boy from the south side of Chicago who had struggles when he was a kid. And it's almost like one teacher was saying to me, I feel like somebody's going to find out. I feel like somebody's going to find out. And it's interesting because Michelle Obama said the same thing. She said it, you know, Viola Davis, another actress. I feel like somebody's going to find out. All of these people who we look up to feel that that inner critic has messed them up as well. So let's talk, Bill, some strategies on how we can pull out of that. Because in this country, we're about to go into a new year in a couple of days, a couple of weeks. I want to prepare my people to go into this new year to say, inner critic, get out of my way. I don't want to drive by looking in the rearview mirror. I want to look straight. Go ahead, Bill. What you got for us?
So the first can be useful given the right context. So behind every behavior, there's always some kind of positive intention. For example, let's say a parent is nagging their child to do their homework. So why does a parent nag their Well, because they want their teenager to do well at school. Why do they want their teenager to do well at school? Because then they go to university, they get the kind of education that they want, so they can get the kind of job that they want. So why does a parent care about their kid doing well at school? They love their child. But when the teenager is hearing mum or dad rousing on them because they haven't done their homework, they're not thinking, oh, there's mum again having a go at me. She wants me to do really well in life because she loves me. They don't hear that. So when someone is listening to the inner critic, underneath the inner critic, there is some positive intention for that person. But we need to go kind of dig deeper and find out what. And until we find that, you know, what's underneath that, we just keep on going on. So the first thing is that criticism does have its place, or critique is a better word. But the thing really, as I said about being awake, is first of all, well, let me take things to heart. And literally, this is what they do. We're talking about language here. And if you think of the linguistics of that phrase, they've taken something to heart. So I've got a pen in my hand. So let's say this pen is something that I've done. It's a book I've created, a piece of art that I've created, or something that I've said. So if someone criticizes this pen, which represents a book, whatever it might be, they might say, Bill, you know, that's a lousy pen. Does that make some way if they're saying, Bill, that's the most beautiful pen I've ever seen in my life, does that make me the most beautiful person I've seen in their life? No, because they're talking about the pen. So I need to distinguish between who I am and what I do. They are separate things, and yes, we are connected, but they're separate. So when people take things to heart, they take this pen, metaphorically, the book, the piece of art, whatever they've done, and they place it really close to their chest, right next to their heart. So if someone criticizes the pen, their finger slips, it hits their body, and what they internalize that into is, you're talking about me. You're saying I'm a piece of shit, that I'm worthless, that I'm bad. So they haven't separated who they are from what they do. So that's the first thing. The other thing is to distinguish between a fact and an opinion. Now, let's say, Lamar, you were to call me a goose or something. If I've suddenly started sprouting feathers and I'm walking with a waddle and I'm making honking noises, then maybe I've actually turned to a goose and I didn't know. So that's a useful piece of information. But if you call me a goose and that's an opinion, that's different from a fact. And then what I need to evaluate is, who is that opinion of me am I going to honour? Is it some online troll on social media that I don't know, I have no, I will never, or am I going to myself? So this boils down to that happiness, in my view, is an inside job. The level of happiness I experience today in this beautiful weather we're having here in Queensland, Australia, it's entirely up to me. I can look out the window and go, wow, it's a sunny day. Oh, no, I want to be inside and read a book. I don't want a sunny day. I want a rainy day. So the day itself, probably the most important thing I could share with you and your audience, and this, again, came from one of my mentors. And he said, we're doing a training program for a year. And 1 week, they said, life is meaningless. Now, that kind of shocked us because we're in a pathway of, you know, finding out what life was all about. And he's saying life is meaningless. And this is what he meant. He put the word event on a flip. Life is full of events, thousands every day, millions during our life. And every event is innocent in and of itself. It's meaningless. But as human beings, we are compelled to place meaning. I'm walking down the street. I see a friend of mine. I wave hello. They completely ignore me. In nanoseconds, I've made up some kind of meaning about them or about me. And it's either a good meaning or not so good meaning. So, you know, I might think, well, what's wrong with him? He doesn't like me. Maybe he doesn't like me. Maybe he's never liked me. Maybe, gosh, maybe no one liked me. Maybe, and I can crank it up until I've got World War III going on inside my head. And that's one meaning. Or I can go, wow, he looked really distracted. I'll just check in with him. On any event, we could have a dozen, we could have 100 different meanings. And whatever meaning that I choose is always self-chosen, but that meaning becomes my reality. So, and here's the kicker. When John Barnum, who was my mentor at the time, he said to me, it doesn't matter the meaning that you're making out of something is true or not. The biggest question is it useful or not? And if it's not useful, to drop it. So, for example, let's say someone says something mean about me, and I boil it all down and go, well, this is just an event. You know, what's the meaning that I'm making out of this? And if I think to myself, this is not worth hanging on to, then I can drop it. And it's the same with internal criticism, external criticism. Our internal critic is always going to be there, but we can turn it around, give it a better job description than the one that has kind of taken on board and go, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and, man, I'm just going to rass on you, tell you all the things. Bad at, you've messed this up. And by the way, any perfectionists, this is what they do. Perfectionists are so good at looking at everything that's wrong about them. They don't focus on the things that's good about them. So how can they expect their life to be any different? But a big mess.
Well, you've given some jewels today that I can use, and also that my listeners can use. But I want to continue the conversation with you. With that being said, how can my listeners get a copy of your book? And if they want to read or listen to anything else that you're doing out there, how can they do that?
Okay. So first of all, it's on Amazon. So you should just Google or just go on Amazon and look for How to Be Bulletproof from Criticism. My book will come up there, so you can purchase it through there. And at the moment, until the end of the year, all the proceeds from that are going to an organization called Destiny Rescue, which basically rescues young girls and boys from forced prostitution in third world countries. They do just wonderful, wonderful work. My website is bulletprooffromcriticism.com. I'm in Australia. And early in 2022, I'm creating a new program called How to Turn Your Inner Critic into Your Best Friend. And it's based on the principles inside of the book.
Well, thank you for what you do, in particular for donating the proceeds of the book to, you know, this human trafficking, which is an issue all over the globe. And so I really appreciate you doing that. Well, I appreciate you hanging out with me today, but you cannot leave just yet, because the second part of the show, it's called the Super Bomb Questions. And the difference between the first part is the Super Bomb Questions are rapid fire. So you're going to answer them as quickly as possible. No commentary. This is brought to us by Mountain Maid. So, Bill, are you ready?
Yep. Got it.
All right. So what's your favorite word?
Oh, tenderness.
What's your favorite quote, or maybe a scripture, or maybe a lyric to a song?
Miracles, and it is, love brings up everything unlike itself for the purpose of healing.
What's your superpower?
Ooh, empathy.
What's your spirit animal?
I'd say an owl.
What moves you to tears of joy?
When people are being truly themselves and they're being open and vulnerable.
What moves you to tears of sorrow? I'm going to do that again. What moves you to tears of sorrow?
When I see people that have got potential and for some reason they're just keeping it inside of them, they're not sure the world.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Ooh, right. More writing.
What advice are you glad you ignored?
You can't.
All right, we went out again. Let me do it again. What advice are you glad you ignored? Didn't hear it.
You can't do that.
What advice would you give your younger self?
Go do it, dude.
What do you know for sure?
Life is an inside job.
If you were in the Mr. Australia talent competition, not Mr. America, what would your talent be?
Okay. Human insight.
There we go. All right. Well, Bill Lee Emery, thank you for hanging out with me today. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all the way from Australia for hanging out with me, brother. Please go out and check out his book. I'm telling you, it will change your life. For those of us that are going into the new year, how to be bulletproof from criticism and do whatever the heck or whatever the hell you want to do. It is your life. Bill, thanks for hanging out with me.
Thanks so much.
I also want to thank my amazing engineer, Alexander Blanc, my super duper producer, my new producer, Carrie Matias Supremacy, for that dope theme music, and all of you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, leave a comment, stop being stingy, because we're on every platform. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, and every Monday and Thursday, you'll get something brand new. And if you want to be on my show, reach out to my producer. I appreciate you hanging out with me, but listen, go ahead and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace. My final thoughts. Words have power. Their meaning crystallizes perceptions that shape our beliefs, drive our behavior, and ultimately create our world. Their power arises from our emotional responses when we read, speak, or hear them. Just say the word fire while barbecuing, or in the workplace, or in a crowded theater, and you'll get three completely different but powerful emotional and energetic reactions.
The Super Bomb Questions are brought to you by Mountain Maid CBD. Mountain Maid is changing the CBD game by offering a line of high-dose CBD tablets at an affordable price. Their products are THC-free and third-party tested for accuracy, cleanliness, and potency. Their products, which ship nationwide, include Build for CBD saturation, Boost for precision titration, and Recover for rest and rehab. With 9 years experience in hemp and fitness, Mountain Maid's founders are focused on creating a quality product to help those who live an activated lifestyle. Check out mountainmaid.life. Again, that's mountainmaid.life to find out more about how their products can help you crush life. Remember, Their products ship nationwide. Go check out their website today and follow them on social media at Mountain Made. That's the at symbol MNTMADE. Our staff at Sound Balming uses Build before a morning workout, which helps to push our bodies to a whole new level on a daily basis. Try Build, try Boost, try Recover. Our staff is using these products to enhance our active lifestyle naturally, and we are crushing life with Mountain Made CBD. And you can too. Start today by going to mountainmade.life and ordering Build, Boost, Recover, or the multitude of other products that they have, which will enhance your lifestyle. I promise you, you won't regret it.